Diversity Beyond the Checkbox is your trusted podcast for meaningful conversations. And now there's a new way to dive deeper. Visit our new website, beyondthecheckbox.com. It's loaded with podcast episodes, valuable resources, and even exclusive bonus content. Learn more and join the movement. Check out beyondthecheckbox.com today by clicking the link in the show notes. Now let's get to the episode.
Welcome to Season 10 of Diversity Beyond the Checkbox, proudly presented by the Diversity Movement and part of the Living Corporate Network. I'm your host, Jackie Ferguson, author, business leader, and human rights advocate. In this podcast, we're diving deep into the stories of trailblazers, game changers, and glass ceiling breakers who share insights in professional success and personal development. Thank you for being part of this amazing community. Enjoy the show. Thank you for tuning in to the Diversity Beyond the Checkbox podcast. Today, I am joined by Sunaina Sinha-Haldia, the Global Head of Private Capital Advisory at Raymond James. Sunaina, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Jackie.
I'm so excited about this conversation because you're doing things that a lot of women aspire to do, but you know the doors are not open, or you're managing your profession at a high success rate, but then you've got a family that you're trying to manage. We're definitely going to get into tips for women in finance, serving on boards, private equity, and creating a work-life integration that is successful for you. But first, Sunaina, let's start with your background. Tell us a little about yourself.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk about these topics that go beyond the obvious. But let me start with sort of the taglines. I was born in India, left India when I was 7 or 8 years old. My dad worked for the World Bank as a diplomat, so moved around quite a lot. Nigeria, Zimbabwe, and Vietnam were my homes before I went to college. Went to college, undergrad, and master's in engineering from Stanford. Worked in the Bay Area for a few years, and then got my MBA at Harvard Business School. And then joined finance, worked in-house for a couple of different large alternative asset managers, and then started my own business. So today, I am the Global Head of Private Capital Advisory at Raymond James. Raymond James acquired the business I started and built over a decade. In addition to that, I sit on a couple of boards. I'm on the board of a clean energy business publicly listed in Germany called SFC Energy. I'm also on the board of a fintech business in Brazil and serve on a couple of Stanford advisory boards as well. So in addition to all that, a very proud mom of 3 kids and 2 dogs.
Love it. I love it. Sunaina, thanks for sharing that. You're very accomplished, and we're going to get into a lot of the aspects of all of the things that you're doing. But let's talk about your career. How did you get started, and take us kind of on the professional journey of, you know, starting from school and then starting your own business and then having that business acquired?
Yeah, I'll start from after I got my MBA. So pre-MBA, they were just starter roles. I don't discount them because I learned a tremendous amount about how do you take initiative and start punching above your weight quickly. So my lesson for anybody in your audience that's in the early innings of their career is really two big ones I learned very quickly. The first is play the long game. There's too many people that I meet, and I'm sure you do too, we're like, well, I've done a great job for the last 3 months. Where's my promotion? Why am I not CEO yet? Like, right. Hello, what's taking so long? Well, that's just not how business operates. It's a play a 10-year game to the relationship. Don't be transactional. And in fact, the folks I worked with, my boss in my first job, is still a very dear friend today. And those are the types of relationships you want. But after getting those, and my second big lesson from those days is, always try to do the job you want, not the job you have. Right? Show them that you can punch to that higher level. Otherwise, it's just you're just a dream that somebody has to buy. And especially if you're a diverse employee like myself, you have to be able to show that before anyone will say, actually, you've been doing kind of a lot of that job already. It's yours. And after business school, I did have a career switch. I was in healthcare and healthcare business development roles in biotech before business school. I decided that that industry was not for me. You needed to have a deep gravitas in science and an MD or a PhD, which I had neither of. And I always wanted to know that I wanted to be the subject matter expert in whatever my chosen line was. And so I decided to look elsewhere and got my foray into finance and joined the financial services industry straight after business school. I worked at two large hedge funds in-house. Got a tremendous training ground there. They were not easy places to work, being one of the only women or one of the few women, and certainly few women of color on hedge fund trading floors isn't easy. But it was baptism by fire in many respects. But they were great training laboratories as to what works and what doesn't work. One of the things in my other big lesson for anyone listening is life doesn't always show you what's for you, but it definitely shows you what's not for you. And what became clear to me was working on in those environments was not for me. I wanted to be the master or mistress of my own destiny. And I was thinking about what next after these two wonderful employers, but thinking about what does my next avatar look like? And actually, somebody at my former firm said to me, have you ever thought about doing something on your own? Because if so, we would become your first client and get you, you know, we believe in you. You could continue to do this job externally as well as internally. And that got me thinking, saying, well, why not try it? And so I did. Being an entrepreneur in any realm is not for the faint of heart, but especially in the financial services industry, where it is, even to this day, let alone 14 years ago when I got started, it is still an old boys network and club. It is incredibly difficult. And I think that the first 3 or 4 years were just that, Jackie. I mean, the stories I could give you could take up many, many hours of your podcast, but they serve no purpose other than to show me I had to get better, do things faster, differently, and add value in ways others were not adding value. There was a force function to be creative and innovative. Still not easy emotionally to hear the no's and to hear some of the comments. But when we got through those first 3 or 4 years and the business started to pick up scale and we started to deploy good work product for our clients, it started to get really rewarding running my own business, growing the team, opening offices in New York, LA, elsewhere. It was tremendously rewarding. And I thought, well, I found my jam. I am here. I'm in it to win it. And just as I was getting comfortable, I got a cold email from this gentleman named Jim Bunn, president of Global Equities and Investment Banking at Raymond James, saying, we've been tracking you for quite some time. We want to talk to you about acquiring your business. It's one of these flashes from the universe. Mm-hmm. I thought it was spam. I was like, who cold emails in this day and age? Like, sure, you know? And lo and behold, I started doing some referencing and saying, well, this is a legitimate person. You should speak with him. Started speaking to Raymond James, and really what stood out for me immediately was the culture. I was looking for, I'd been my own boss for 10 years at that point. Right. If I was going to sell the business and now go work for someone else, the first thing that needed to fit for me was that cultural element, the autonomy of being able to have freedom of operation and so on. And Raymond James gave me all that and more. So rest is history. I sold the firm to them in summer of 2021. And now I run the business globally for them around the world within this new avatar at Raymond James.
That's amazing. So Nana, as you mentioned, women comprise, there's not a lot of women financial leaders in the space. In fact, they comprise only about 7%, and culturally diverse women even less. So how have you continued to advance your career in finance in this male-dominated industry?
I think that it's really been three key ways, Jackie. The first is don't take it personally, even though it sounds personal. Each person is carrying their own, we're all prisoners of our own experiences and backgrounds. So some of the things you hear, it's not about you, it's about the baggage, background, stereotypes, predispositions of the person speaking. If you let that stuff pull you down, you won't get anywhere. That you suddenly have taken someone else's baggage and added it onto your baggage, and now it's all very heavy. The first thing is you take a look at yourself and make sure that you focus on the only thing you can control, which is how you show up, your inputs. The outcomes are not in your control. Someone gave me the recipe, the equation for happiness. Happiness is simply reality minus expectations equals happiness. I'm an engineer. I love equations, right? So if reality always exceeds expectations and you do everything possible to make sure you show up with your hardest possible work, your most creative brain, your best attitude, you leave the rest and the outcomes may or may not come, but then you don't have any expectations attached to it. So I think that's really important as a woman of color or person of color to be able to focus on just what you can control. The second thing, and I would have said this first, but I think the point I made first is very true to my heart. We can only control ourselves, not anyone or anything else. The second thing that has been my superpower is preventative mental health techniques. I have focused on meditation as the core tenet of mine, and that has helped me really reflect deeply and get to better outcomes and change things faster and faster. It's a core value of mine to be able to first look inside and say, okay, let's employ the growth mindset here. What has worked, what isn't working, let's truly introspect and use the meditation to reset the brain back to center, reset the mind back to center over and over again, faster and faster, so you can start again. And that's been a huge superpower. And thirdly, and I think lastly, and this is something I learned the incredible hard way, is that if you don't do it differently, nobody else will believe that it can be done and you can't point any fingers. So 2/3 of my business, nearly 2/3, over 60% of my business is women and minorities. It's 100% female led even to this day. And for me, it was very important that you have to be the change you wish to see in the world, right? No point out there and say the world's not diverse or this organization is not diverse, that organization. What you can control, back to lesson number one, you control. And I think be the change you wish to see is one of my best favorite sayings, because there's no one else you can expect that from but yourself.
Love that. That's such good advice, Anaina. Thank you for sharing that. You're a regular contributor on the financial markets on CNBC, Bloomberg, and BCC. Tell us from your perspective, why is representation so vital?
Well, I think we've all heard that old adage, you can't be what you can't see. I hate to be hokey, but it's so true. And yeah, this morning, I really didn't want to get up at 4:45 for that 6:30 a.m. spot that one of these channels wanted me to take. I said, you know, I'm probably one of the only women guests that they have all morning. If I don't show up, I feel that I have almost a duty to show other women and girls that it is possible. It is possible to be, have credibility, have gravitas, have presence just as much as any other guy. And I think that it's the starfish model, Jackie, right? We can't save everyone and everything. But if one person takes inspiration from what I've done or seeing me on air or talking about finance and markets and technical things and says, I want to do that too, I can do that, that's, you know, I would be deeply fulfilled that I could, you know, get one additional woman to think about a career in this field, to believe in themselves and to show up.
I love that. I love that. And, you know, it's so important, as you said, Anaina, to see people who look like us, who represent us in those positions, because sometimes you just never know that that's a field that you should consider pursuing, right? If you don't know anyone in that field, that's not something that generally you open up for yourself. You emulate the people that you respect. And so I love that. I think that's
I'll add one more thing, Jackie, because when you were talking, what you're saying is so true, but it has sparked this thought in me, which I think is worth sharing, that I do it not just for the women and girls that are watching and people of color, but also for the bosses out there, right? That is for the CEOs in their C-suite executives to think, oh, she's good. If she can be so good, do I not have a female star here who can go and do some of this for me? Right? Because that's majority, let's be honest, that's the majority of the audience that's watching CNBC at 6:30 in the morning. Absolutely. So that is important for them to see it too.
I love it. I love that. So Anaina, you've served and are serving on several boards. We know that there are favorable outcomes for companies with women who do sit on those boards. Will you share how women professionals begin to seek out and secure board positions?
Yes, and there's really two avenues. The first is, can you join an organization who invests in businesses or supports businesses and can nominate you, right? Listen, ladies, it's not easy. Let's put it this way. You have to be sponsored to one. It's just how the world, it's very clubby. If what you really want to do is sit on boards, then can you become an advisor to a venture or growth fund or a private equity fund out there? Can you become an advisor to, do you work in accounting? Do you work in consulting? And then you can you become friends with the CEO of a business that you're super interested in? Start adding value to that person. And then, you know, the second piece of advice is make the ask. So many women are like, I'm just going to show up to a great job. And then they're going to notice me. Oh, she there over there, third desk on the left. She's my pick. Let me break it to you all. It doesn't work like that. If you don't ask, you don't get. Make the ask. I'd love to serve on your board. Here are the three things I can add. What's the worst that can have that can happen? They'll say no. Oh, well, you made the ask. Maybe you'll ask, make the ask again 2 years, 3 years later, or maybe you'll make the ask of another company. I think the first path of least resistance is go and find an organization that sponsors champions for board seats and try to make a connection to them. Start making friends with CEOs who have boards that want representation and start telling them how much value you can add. Start making some contributions already and then make sure you're very clear about the ask. It's something I was not natural at. I'm told by my family that there's a lot of implications like, oh, ma'am, you know, maybe we could do this. I had to train myself to be very explicit in what is it that I want, say it in those words, and then stop, pause, and let the other person react.
That's such good advice. And so many of us, you know, kind of dance around the actual ask. Sometimes you can have a little bit of trepidation or fear around being that direct, right? And society certainly has, you know, instilled in us not to be direct in our asks and requests like that. And so we need to practice, as you said, asking for what we want. That's so important.
And it's not just asking for what we want. You know, one of the pieces of compliments, and I do view it as a compliment. You're so direct. You're too direct. Thank you. I don't know what that means. What does it mean to direct? But now I take that as a compliment because it was not that long ago I was told, be more explicit. We're not sure what you're really asking.
Right.
So it is a muscle you can build. And I often tell my mentees or anyone asking for advice, go practice it, you know, at the farmer's market or the flea market of like, I don't want to pay $100 for this. I want to pay $85. Right. And sort of hear yourself make these asks.
Yeah.
Direct way saying, would you mind if you took $88? Like, no, not that way. Be direct and then go practice there because we all need practicing when it's game time and you're asking for a salary increase or when you're asking for a board seat. Mm-hmm. Ooh, and you haven't had any practice. That's a very scary thing. So go get some practice sessions out in the regular world so that you can hear your voice come out more and more.
I love that. And, you know, the thing about the ask, Sanana, is that even if no is today's answer, it puts that in that manager's mind, in that CEO's mind, that that's something that you're interested in that maybe that individual never thought of before. At having you for that role or that position. And now it's in their mind. So that's so important. So important. So Nana, very often we find women entrepreneurs, especially culturally diverse women, underrepresented from a private equity standpoint. What's your advice for how women entrepreneurs navigate investment conversations and obtain capital to grow their businesses?
And they really are severely represented. There are just not enough female investors out there, whether it's in private equity, venture capital, what have you. And so female entrepreneurs have no one they can relate to when they go knocking on doors to raise capital. You know, while I can give you all sorts of, you know, advice about make a list of all the firms with a woman and reach out that way, then you're reaching out using the diversity card only. And diversity in and of itself is not a reason for anyone to cut a check, right? It has your value proposition, your business or your investment idea has to stand on its own two feet. So the best advice I would have for women in that situation is make sure you go get yourself best advice and advisors possible to make your story as strong as it can be. You know, for example, go get a very good lawyer to tell you what investors are looking for and where the holes might be in your story. Practice with him or her. Have him or her introduce you to their contacts. Same thing with an accountant. Same thing with other advisors around the business, maybe a consultant you're working with. Partner up. There's no shame in it. We all needed to partner up to get started. We all needed to use the lawyer or the consultant or say, oh, great. So you're a consultant to businesses, but you're also very closely linked to this investment firm. Let's see if there's something we can do together to create a win-win. You have to get creative. Don't be shy about linking up with people who have more robust networks than you. You'll use that to get to your next step.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's just so much that very often we as entrepreneurs are very passionate about our service or our product. And there are questions that we're going to be asked of a private equity firm that we're not prepared for. So having someone in your circle that can ask you those tough questions, those questions that you say, gosh, I never thought about it like that, or I didn't consider that. Those are so important because they get you ready for those private equity conversations. Absolutely.
Words are powerful and communication is key to success in business and relationships. How do you ensure your words foster welcoming, inclusive, and safe environments for everyone? The answer is inclusive language. The Inclusive Language Handbook, a guide to better communication and transformational leadership, available in paperback and as an ebook, explains today's best practices for inclusive word choice and common phrases to avoid, with guided exercises to increase understanding and improve your impact immediately. No matter what your role, make sure your words land respectfully and effectively. Order your copy today by visiting theinclusivelanguagehandbook.com.
Absolutely. And, you know, the unknown unknowns, to quote former defense secretary.
That's right.
It's real. It's real. Like the more you unearth those unknowns and suddenly, you know, you get a little bit of glimpse of how the other side operates, it's just going to make you stronger, smarter, come across more fluently when you're in that room.
So, Naina, a question for you, right? So many of us, especially as women, like to take the safe steps. But you have taken so many big leaps in your career and done things that so many of us aspire to do, but haven't taken the necessary steps or aren't sure how to start. What has given you the confidence to move from, you know, school to your jobs, to starting your own business, to having it acquired, to serving on these boards? To, you know, how do you go through that full process? And what advice do you have for those of us who may want to take those steps, but we're unsure or afraid?
I only have one piece of advice in this regard, and that is to double down on getting really good at failing, right? Make that an art and a skill you learn, and learn now. You can learn whether you're 25 or 65. Learn how to fail better, faster, and more elegantly. Oops, I fell. Oh, look at me. I'm back up. And yeah, that path there, that's really slippery. So I'm going to edge 3 inches to the right, and I'm going to just skirt past there. That, you know, Carol Dweck is the professor at Stanford who coined the term growth mindset and wrote about it for the first time. There is magic in there. You are going to, the only way I've done all of these things is by going into it knowing, I'm going to fail a ton, and that's okay. That's cool. That's not a reflection of who I am. I'm going to learn a whole lot, and I'm going to use those learnings to make new mistakes. I won't make the same ones again. Here's the thing about the universe and the way the world works, Jackie. It's always trying to tell us something. If you don't hear it, it'll come back harder and harder, and you'll keep learning the same mistakes over again. How many people do you and I know, and myself included, have been through this journey of, oh, I didn't hear that the first time. It's come back harder and louder this time around. So the faster you get at recognizing, ah, this is what I'm meant to learn here. You know, I love the question, and I ask myself this every day, what is this moment here to teach me? What's the gift here for me? Take the gift, apply the gift, take the lessons, make sure it's not those mistakes, it's new ones. It just means that you'll keep going and keep trying new things, and eventually something will stick. And that's, you're like, ah, I found something that works. Keep following that thread.
Love it. Love it. You often credit a decades-long practice of meditation for the ability to manage your career and your family. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Absolutely. The year I started the business, I went to my first Vipassana meditation course. And they're free courses run all around the world. There are centers across the United States, 20 plus or so, and across Europe and Asia. And you take you go into a boot camp course. You take this meditation boot camp course. And they teach you, go in not knowing anything about meditation. I'd had a little bit of dabbling here and there, but it's just essentially a complete beginner. They teach you how to meditate start to finish. It's like anything else in life, Jackie. Like, we do so much for our bodies. Right? We go to the gym to build our biceps and our quads. We brush our teeth to clean them. We take a shower every day to clean the body. What is it that we do for the mind? The mind controls our entire life's experience. Mental health is health, right? Oftentimes we think about mental health when things go wrong. Someone has depression, someone has anxiety, and then we're trying to fix. What is it that every single listener is doing on a daily basis to strengthen the mind, to build the mind's resilience reserves? So when the knocks come, Jackie, the knocks come to one and all. One and all. No one has spared them. That's something I think we all know to be universally true. No matter how jazzy the Instagram feed, no one has spared them. So when the knocks come, do you have a reserve you can call on, a reserve of faith, a reserve of meditation, a reserve of something that helps lift you out and onto the other side? And for me, meditation has been that something. The ability to go every morning and meditate, come what may, for an hour a day. I've had the practice. I didn't start like that. People go, wow, how'd you do an hour? I don't have an hour. You have three kids and running a global business. I didn't either in the beginning. I started with 5 or 7 minutes, which then became 10, which became 12. And then it took me a few years, and then it was an hour. And now an hour is most natural for me. So you do whatever comes naturally. You respect your mind and your body for where they are today. Maybe 4 minutes, it may be 8 minutes. Who knows? Who cares? Start with what you have and build from there. And you'll find the muscle building. The mind will become quieter and quieter. The most common refrain I get of people who come into my office is, I wake up at 2:30 in the a.m. and the mind is racing. I don't know what to do. How do I turn this thing off? The ability to control your mind, mastery of your mind, control over your mind, the ability to turn it off is a superpower. Ladies, especially for us, you know, there is so much that we have to take in on a day-to-day basis in our lives. The ability to go quieten it down and say, that's it for today. And go off and spend your time doing something else, not fixated on whatever the stories are that you've taken on board. It's a real gift you can give yourself.
Wow. I love that. And certainly, you know, it occurred to me, having meditated before, that I do struggle because I don't do it enough, right? I do struggle once I get to that 5-minute mark with, what am I going to make for dinner? Did I get that project submitted? Do I need to repaint my walls, right?
Yeah, the to-do list.
So how, Sunaina, do you recommend for us novices, right? For those of us who may have tried it and been very unsuccessful, how do we start thinking about quieting our mind?
So there's two things. The first is an investment. And the second is a practice that you can start now. The investment is an investment of time. There's no money involved. The meditation courses that certainly I've been to are all free. And after you finish the course, you may or may not want to make a donation, entirely optional. But invest the time. It is a week long. They do insist on that first course being that full duration. After that, you can take smaller weekend courses or daily courses. But they want to give you that full boot camp training to teach you the technique from start to finish. So Google Vipassana meditation in your favorite state or USA or Europe or wherever you're listening in from. And they have the calendar for the rest of the year. Pick a week and go. Invest in yourself. Invest in your mental strength. if that's a ways off for you, and it might be for many people, not everybody has a week to give to this, then start with something, anything today. There are so many meditation apps out there. I've lost count. Everyone recommends their favorite one. I don't have one because I learned meditation through the course. But find any app. It doesn't matter. And put it on and start with 5 minutes. If 5 minutes is your threshold, Jackie, start with 5 minutes, but do it consistently. The data shows that if you do something for 21 days, you know, back to back, it'll stick. It starts becoming a habit pattern. And then start extending from there. Okay, I've done 2 weeks or 5 minutes. Maybe I can do six now and see how that feels. And you'll find your mind getting stronger and stronger and be able to hold the practice longer.
Wow. That's awesome. I'm going to definitely start that. So, Naina, very often we prioritize our mental health, as you said, after we experience burnout or feel run down or we're about to break. What do we need to understand about preventative mental health?
We need to understand that it is the mind's ability to bounce back from life's vagaries. Because the way I would describe it and the way it's described in the meditation courses in Vipassana is we all carry baggage. 100 tons? Let's just make it up. I don't know. But if you, because of meditation, you suddenly lose just 2 tons and it's 98 tons, that's 2 tons you've lost. That's a lot of space you've created in your life and in your mind for new things to come and take their place. I say it in a slightly different way to different types of audiences. Maybe this is helpful for yours. Like, if you would have become angry or sad or upset with somebody for 4 hours after something untoward happened with them, and now because you meditate, it's 3 hours and 45 minutes. That is 15 minutes of freedom you bought yourself, right? If you would have gotten 8 out of 10 anxious or upset, and now you're 7 out of 10 anxious or upset, that's almost a 18% different. That's big in the severity of your symptoms. So preventative mental health is, you know, it's not that you're going to start meditating or start praying or start doing any of these breathing practices, et cetera, and suddenly it's all going to be zeroed out. You know, we're not Buddhas. We're not monks. We live in this field of going to jobs and having families and so on and so forth. But it is an investment in your mind's ability to adapt and adapt to what life's throwing at you. Otherwise, what happens with burnout or other types of mind, you know, when the mind gets disrupted, it suddenly becomes too much sadness, too much uncertainty, which brings anxiety, too much, you know, work product, too many to-do lists, and then there's burnout. And preventative mental health is just a clearing practice to bring it down a notch so you can feel more the next day.
Great advice. Thank you for that. You know, and it's so important because as you said earlier, Sunaina, we don't think about mental wellness or well-being until after we're experiencing a problem. And now, you know, we're running for a massage or, you know, getting a pedicure and thinking that that's going to fix it when in fact, we need to be thinking about our well-being on a daily basis. I think that's so important. So important.
That's right. That's right. I would double click on daily. Mm-hmm. Nothing is built without regular practice. It really has to be very incremental and done over long periods of time to see benefits. I have people who go to one meditation group like, I've done it now. I know how to meditate. Right. I don't need to do it every day. But then the benefits are not going to come every day. Let's just be clear.
Right. That's right. I totally agree. And taking, you know, prioritizing a little bit of space for ourselves on a daily basis. And again, especially as women, especially when we're balancing work and family, it seems hard, but it's so important to dedicate those few minutes, right, to ourselves. It's so important. So, Naina, this has been so awesome. I'm so excited about this conversation and the people that are going to listen. I have a graduating senior that my daughter's graduating from college this year. And this conversation, thank you. This conversation, she is definitely, I'm going to encourage her to listen to because you're such an inspiration in the number of things that you're doing, the ladders that you're climbing, that so many of us just, we don't, when you get to those levels, you don't see people that look like us. right? And so the more we can have these conversations and the more people that are listening to these conversations, these young folks coming up will be able to be inspired by it and then climb those ladders alongside. And I'm so excited about that. So Nana, what's the message that you want to leave our listeners with today?
Be the change you wish to see in this world. If you want a calmer relationship with somebody, you calm your mind first. If you want to see a more diverse world, you build the diversity around you first. You be the change you wish to see in the world. It's the only thing you can control.
Amazing. Thank you for that. So Nana, how can listeners learn more about your work and connect with you?
Follow me on LinkedIn. It's the only social media platform I use. So just type my name in and you'll find me and follow me. And I keep trying to share nuggets from the world of finance, investing, and of course, preventative mental health and gender and diversity issues.
Amazing. So Nana, thank you so much for taking time with me today to be on the show. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you for having me. It's been such a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Diversity Beyond the Checkbox. If you loved this show, please take a moment to share it with a friend, leave a rating and review, and subscribe so you'll be reminded when new episodes are released. Become part of our community on Instagram, LinkedIn, X, YouTube, and TikTok. Or subscribe to our newsletter at beyondthecheckbox.com. This show is part of the Living Corporate Network, sponsored by the Diversity Movement, and edited and produced by Earfluence. I'm Jackie Ferguson. Take care of yourself and each other.